Thank you. Okay, maybe I should mention that this talk was originally intended to be given by Igor Vjalakovic, who is now. Oh, am I not on air? Ah, it's somehow on. Okay, do you hear me? Huh? Okay, so Igor is, as I said, this is in Berlin now. He's 3 weeks ago he became a father, so that's why I give the talk here. And yeah, he's my supervisor. Holger Boche is the professor at the TU Berlin. And yeah, well, let's get started, right? First of all, I'm going to talk about compound quantum channels, and you can find the paper on that on the archive, and it's also going to appear in Communications in Mathematical Physics. And the second part of the talk is about work in progress, which is compound codes for arbitrarily varying channels. Okay, we first need some basic notational stuff. First of all, we use entanglement fidelity. And, well, there's a reason for that. So suppose we have a sender A who has a pure entangled state in his possession, and this state is in the state space F of a composite system, F, tensor F. These F stand for finite dimensional Hilbert spaces, and throughout the talk, every Hilbert space will be of finite dimension. And now A wishes to transmit one half of his state to the receiver B, and he uses a quantum channel N, which is a completely positive trace-preserving map, and goes from H to K. And well, it maps the operator spaces the operator space on H to the operator space on K. But I shall just say that it maps H to K. Okay. And for this purpose, A uses an encoding map P, which is also completely positive and trace preserving, and maps this system to the input of the channel. And B uses a recovery map. And as a measure of success of the whole process, we take entanglement fidelity, which is just the overlap of the original state psi with its transformed version. And here, this is the definition of entanglement fidelity. It takes on values between 0 and 1, and rho is just a partial trace over the one system here. So you can also read the definition the other way around, right? Starting from a state rho, you can come up with a purification, and this here is then the definition of entanglement fidelity. And we also need coherent information, and this is just a measure of how much noise is induced by a channel, and it's given by the output for Neumann entropy of the channel minus the entropy exchange, and the entropy exchange is just the output for Neumann entropy of tensor the channel. Okay, now we come to the compound setting. We want to transmit entanglement from a sender A to a receiver B now by use of M instances of a memoryless quantum channel. And we have a problem. Neither sender nor receiver knows exactly which channel they are communicating over. But what they know is that it belongs to some set of channels, and we call this set I. And I gave you a picture here of the situation. So that's just to remind the order of the quantities that appear here. This thing here, this pi, is a maximally mixed state. And for every subspace x, every space x, I will denote by pi x the maximally mixed state on the space or subspace. And this picture is somehow wrong, so it suggests that we are transmitting maximally mixed states, but as you all know, maximally mixed states and maximally entangled states are sort of a one-to-one correspondence between them. So I just draw this picture because it's kind of difficult to draw entanglement transmission, and the whole purpose is to show you the order of the mathematical quantities here. Now, our goal is to maximize the entanglement fidelity here. Overall channels in our set, And for this, we are allowed to choose maximally mixed states and recovery operations and encoding operations at our will. The main point, or the important point, is that they do not depend on the channel which we use. So that's the difference to the usual entanglement transmission setting, yeah? when we only have one single channel. Now we have to use things that work well for every channel in the set. So there's the picture again, and we need to define what codes and achievable rates are. So first of all, the compound quantum channel, which we shall abbreviate by CQC, associated with a set I in the set of completely positive phase-preserving maps, is just this set here. And an MKM code for this compound channel is a Hilbert space FM, where we fix the dimension of the Hilbert space FM to equal KM, and also a pair of encoding and a recovery operation. And then we say that rate and non-negative number R is achievable for the compound channel I if we have a sequence of such codes, such that first of all the limit of 1 over m log KM is greater than or equal to R. And second, we have asymptotically perfect entanglement transmission for every channel in the set I. And the capacity of the compound channel I is then, as usual, just the supremum of all achievable rates. And our main result is that for an arbitrary compound channel I, set of channels, We state that the capacity is given by this regularized formula here. And the important point is that you have max the infimum and then the maximization, not the other way around. So this value is smaller than the lowest capacity of the single channels in the set. Okay. So how do we get there? I'll first give you an outline of the proof. So we start with a finite case, and suppose we want to prove the direct part, then we will do this as follows. We will show that for every finite set of quantum channels, there exists a sequence of MKM codes such that this entanglement fidelity is lower bounded by 1 minus n squared times mu m. And the dimension of the subspaces here will be given by some exponential term, and the sequence here will go to zero exponentially fast, which will be important later, whenever we choose R to be small enough, and this will depend on I. Then there will also be a converse. I should note that the usual approach here with Fano's inequality does not work fast. So we use a result which is due to Devitak, and then apply the data processing inequality. And then we switch to the general case. So we just take a finite set of quantum channels, which we call tau net, in order to approximate the original set in the Diamond norm. Then we see, okay, this finite set defines a compound channel, a finite compound channel. And for the direct part, we will then take a sequence of such finite sets, or tau nets, which grows sub-exponentially fast. And as you see here, then we can sort of have we can play with the fact that we have a sub-exponential and exponential behavior here. And for the converse part, which I'm not going to talk to about today, we use a recent result of Leung and Smith, which was presented yesterday to you. Okay, now let's one slide for the converse here in the final case. Suppose we have a finite quantum compound channel. Then the statement is that the capacity is upper bounded by this value here. And for this, we, as I just told you, use a lemma which is due to Devitak. And what I show you here is a sort of an applied version. So suppose we have a pure maximally entangled state in a composite system here, and then another pure state in another composite system, and a map D which maps H here to F. And we have an exponentially large Hilbert space F. And then we can define the partial trace of this maximally mixed state here. And then the statement is that the coherent information is somehow close to MR. Well, as you see from this formula, we could divide this by 1 over M. And then if you do so, we get a bound on this value of R here. Here on the right-hand side, the idea is to sort of use our codes. So these here are the maximally entangled states that we wish to transmit. And for D, we use a recovery map, the channel, and our encoding. And the thing then is that we have to somehow get rid of the encoding map because the data processing inequality helps us to get rid of the recovery map, okay? But I'm not going to go into detail here. The original paper can be found in the paper of Debitak here. Okay, now for the direct part, first of all, we're going to take a finite compound channel, and then we're going to take a subspace of H and some small quantity delta here, greater than zero, and define some number here. And we're going to show that this number is achievable for every such choice. And thus, the capacity of the compound channel will be lower bounded by this minimum here. Then we're going to use this result, make this finite approximation in order to show that the capacity of a general compound channel is lower bounded by this infimum here. And from there, we take a compound variant of the BSST lemma, and this will then give us this regularized formula. Okay, for the first part, there's one important observation. Suppose we want to faithfully transmit a sequence of maximally mixed state over a finite compound channel, and we take this the subspaces to be placed into a tensor product space, and this again is a part of H tensor M, and we fix the dimension of this F of Fn, and obviously we want R to be large. Then the key idea will be to first show the existence of encoding and recovery maps such that they work well for the average channel here. Okay, so suppose we have a sequence of such maps which produces somehow high entanglement fidelity, and in the limit of M tending to infinity, we have perfect entanglement transmission. Then we can use convex linearity of the entanglement fidelity in the channel, and thereby get a lower bound on every single channel here. And asymptotically, this constant factor N here will do nothing bad for us. For our purposes, this is just enough. Okay, in order to get good codes for the average channel, we employ the following theorem, which is proven using the decoupling approach. And it says that if we are given two subspaces E and G of H, we fix the dimension of E to be equal to K, and take an arbitrary choice of completely positive and maybe trace decreasing maps that have representations with nj Krauss operators, then this following inequality here is true. And okay, well, what does it say? Okay, first of all, we have an integral over the unitary group here using the Haar measure, and we identify unitary operators with unital quantum channels by this formula here. And so suppose that this quantity on the right-hand side here is equal to alpha, some alpha between 0 and 1, then the statement of this formula is that there exists one unitary, or at least one unitary, such that this value here is lower bounded by alpha. And since this is a maximum of all recovery maps, there has to be at least one recovery map then, such that this value here is greater than alpha. or equal to alpha. And so we have a unitary or unital encoder and a recovery map that works somehow well. And all we have to do now is to find good bounds on these quantities here. Okay, we cannot try to apply this theorem. Maybe we just plug in the tensor product channels here. So that's the same theorem again, except that I put m's everywhere here. Okay, and here we have the tensor product channel, and we integrate over a larger group. And now if we take a look at the lower bound here, then we see that this here is certainly equal to 1 because the channels are trace preserving. Okay, I mean, in this application, they are. Okay, and we see that here we have this Km is equal to 2 to the mR. And so we are left with the other two quantities here on the right-hand side. So what we have to do now is come up with good bounds for them. That will be quite difficult. So we will choose another approach. Okay, the idea will be to use only typical Krauss operators and then we and project onto typical subspaces of the output of the channel, of each individual channel, by use of operations that we define in this way here, and the small QIMs are projections onto typical subspaces. Then we will get something like that here, where we have these projections applied after the channel. So if we have a good bound on that, a good lower bound, okay, then we are sure that we have good lower bounds also on the individual channels here, but we have the projections applied after the channel now. So this will be a good lower bound for an informed receiver. And that's a problem because you see the index I here is the same. Okay, we do not want this to happen. But so maybe something like this following statement here could be true. So suppose you have a state rho and two operations D and A and such a projection here in between, and this is somehow equal to 1, then maybe if we just leave the projection out, it will stay close to 1. Okay, so that way we could get rid of the projections. And the following lemma says that this is true. Okay, so if we have a state rho and some Hilbert space H, and we have some other space Hilbert space, some other Hilbert space K, an operation mapping H to K, and some other mapping K back to H, and a projection on K. And we let this projection introduce an operation by this formula. Then if the entanglement fidelity of rho and D after Q after A is greater than 1 minus epsilon, then if we leave the projection away, it will stay close to 1. So it will be lower bounded by 1 minus 3 epsilon, which for our purposes is enough, since 3 is just a constant. So now we want to get an estimate on this integral here. And what we do is project onto typical subspaces. And by the lemma, we know that this does not change much. Yeah. So if we have good lower bounds for the channels with the projections applied after them, then we also have good bounds for the channels without the projections. So we rather estimate this integral. Then we use only typical cross operators of these product channels here. And we call the resulting channels n hat. So using only the typical cross operators means that we throw away the rest. And since entanglement fidelity is convex linear in the channel, we will get a lower bound by that. And also, we get nice estimates on the number of Krauss operators. So we will make this estimate here. And then we apply the theorem. And this gives us this lower bound here. Now, by properties of typical subspaces and typical Krauss operators, we can lower bound this first term here by 1 minus delta m, and this also this is a sequence delta m, and this goes to 0 exponentially fast and independent from the choice of channels. And if you plug that in here, we get this estimate. Now these n hat, the typical versions of the channels, have approximately this number of cross operators here, and approximately means that I neglect sub-exponential terms. And if you put that in, we get this value here. And also we can come up with a good estimate on the 2 norm. So what we have here now is coherent information. And if we now put our choice of the dimension of Km into this formula, we get this lower bound, and we see that whenever we choose this R to be smaller than every of these values, we will have an exponential decay of this this term here to zero. So we will find good codes. Okay. So the point now is that for every subspace G of H and delta strictly larger than 1, if we define a rate by this formula here, then it will be achievable. And so for every subspace G of H, since delta was arbitrary, we get this lower bound here on the capacity of the compound channel. And so now suppose we made this choice here, then we have this estimate here. We can now just put this all in and get this lower bound here. So that's just to show you that, well, we have some exponential term here, and this here is sort of non-exponential. Yeah. Okay, so for each subspace G of H, each delta larger than zero, and M element M, where this M element, where this M has to be chosen, has to be large enough, so we can now have an MKM code with this, with the following properties. First of all, the dimension of Km is given by this value here. Second, the entanglement fidelity of encoder recovery operation and average channel is lower bounded by this right-hand side. And by convex linearity of entanglement fidelity, we can find this lower bound here now for every single channel in the set. And the factor 6 here comes from the application of the entanglement fidelity lemma. Okay, so we just threw away the projections. And this holds for arbitrary finite compound channels. So whenever we choose the rate to be, something like that. And we get codes with this property here. Okay. Now we want to go from there to the general setting, and in order to do that, we use these finite nets in the set of channels. And I highlighted the important properties here in red. So, for each what this says here is that for each set in the set of completely positive and trace-preserving maps, we can find a finite set which depends on an approximation parameter tau, such that the cardinality of the set is upper bounded by something like that here, somehow polynomial term. If we choose tau to be, let's say 1 over m, then this is polynomial in m. And this the entanglement fidelity of every channel in the original set is somehow approximated by some other channel in the finite set, and the approximation is of that is of order m times tau. And also coherent information is somehow well approximated. Okay, so this we can replace the infimum over all channels in the set here by a minimum, and we do not lose too much if tau is small. Now we want to show that for an arbitrary compound quantum channel, in every subspace G of H, the capacity is lower bounded by this infimum. And in order to do that, we choose a subspace and a delta. We set the rate to be equal to this infimum, and we choose a sequence of taus here for this for these nets here. We can choose 1 over m to the m square, And then we know that the cardinality of this set is polynomial in N. And from the proof of the direct part, we know that for every M in N, we can have an MKM code such that the minimum of all channels in the finite set is lower bounded by this quantity here. Well, this is here the cardinality of the set originally. So this is polynomial in M. And the dimension of these subspaces is given by this number here. And using the second estimate here, we get that for every channel in the set, this lower bound here holds. So we have a sort of another polynomial factor on the right-hand side here. Well, it's not quite polynomial, but so somehow sub-exponential. And by the third property, we see that we also can have this equality here. Okay. So, well, that way we have proven that the capacity is lower bounded by this infimum, right? And from there on, we use this compound BSSG lemma. So, for an arbitrary state in the state space of some Hilbert space, we can come up with a sequence of maximally mixed states such that for an arbitrary set of channels here, this regularized infimum here converges to this infimum here. Okay, and we use this formula together with this identity here. Yeah, so we said I tensor M equals the compound channel that consists of the maps of the form N tensor M with N from the original set, and then you have to show this equality here and apply it, I don't know, two times and use the BSSG lemma, and then you get this lower bound here. Okay, now I'm going to switch to arbitrarily varying quantum channels. Again, we have some finite set here of completely positive trace-preserving maps, and input Hilbert space H, output Hilbert space K, and we have a sender who can address the input with encoding maps, and a receiver who sort of controls the output of the channels by use of recovery maps. But now there's a bad guy in the game, and he can choose a sequence sequence SM out of this alphabet here, and according to the sequence he then chooses a product channel here, and A and B have to use this channel for their communication, but they have a problem: they don't know which channel the bad guy has chosen. So their goal will be to find encoding and decoding schemes that work for every choice of these product channels here, which is kind of a harder task than the one we had before. And what we will be trying to do is use compound channels for this problem. But first of all, we have to define what the code is and what achievable rate means and what the capacity is. So a random MKM code for a finite AVQC will be a probability measure on the set where these are the encoding operations, here are the decoding operations or recovery operations, and we also have to choose a sigma algebra. And again, we set the dimension of the Hilbert space to KM, and we say that a non-negative number R is randomly achievable for the AVQC if we can come up with a sequence of M, K, M random codes such that this lim inf 1 over M log K M here is lower bounded by R, and we have asymptotically perfect entanglement transmission on average over our random code, and for every choice of channel that the jammer might choose. Okay. And then the random entanglement transmission capacity of the ABQC will be defined, or is defined, by the supremum of all achievable rates again. Okay, these random codes are kind of strange, so we do not really want to use them. Right, what we are after are deterministic codes. So we have to define what a deterministic code is in this setting here. So a deterministic MKM code will just be a random MKM code, which consists of a Dirac measure. So it assigns probability 1 to one pair of encoder and receiver, and 0 to any other choice of encoder and receiver. And then a non-negative number R is deterministically achievable if we have a sequence of such of deterministic codes with this property here. And again, asymptotically perfect entanglement transmission for every channel that the jammer might choose. And again, the capacity, deterministic entanglement transmission capacity is given by the supremum over all the achievable rates. Okay. Now, in the classical setting, in the classical arbitrarily classical arbitrarily varying quantum channel, there's the famous Eisele dichotomy, and what we have proven is a quantum analog of that. So for every finite set of completely positive trace preserving maps, we shall denote by I hat here its convex hull, so just the set of all probabilistic mixtures of channels from the original set. And then we can formulate this dichotomy as follows. For every finite ABQC, it's random code capacity entanglement. Yeah, well, its random capacity is given by this regularized formula. And as you know from the previous slides, this is just the entanglement transmission capacity of the compound channel I had. Okay, and then here is the dichotomy. Either we have that the deterministic capacity of the arbitrarily varying quantum channel is equal to zero, or it equals the random coding capacity. So it's kind of a problem, because we obviously want to know exactly when it is zero and when not. But first we will be satisfied with this dichotomy. So suppose we want to show the existence of good random codes for the ABQC, or equivalently, we want to show this formula here. What can we do? We apply Eisele's robustification technique, or a variant of that. And this converts compound codes for I hat into random codes for I, or for the ABQC I. Okay. How does it work? First of all, here's this. We have a theorem. It's very general. Okay, if we have a function f. If we read the theorem, quantities are explained here at the bottom of the page. So suppose we have a function f which maps permutations and elements of this alphabet here into the closed interval between 0 and 1, and it is invariant under the action of the permutations, and additionally this average here of the function over this alphabet here is lower bound by 1 minus gamma for some fixed permutation here, and every empirical distribution on the alphabet. Then we can somehow switch between the average on SM, or on the on the second entry to an average over the first entry here. Okay, so the average over the permutation group here, over the first entry, will be lower bounded then by 1 minus 3 times square root of gamma times n plus 1 to the cardinality of S. And this will hold for every word in the alphabet then. And, well, as you know, we sort of, in our setting, in the arbitrarily varying quantum channel setting, we can identify channels with these words. So that's why this is interesting for us. And also, yeah, well, I'm just going to carry on. Okay, now we want to apply this thing here. Okay, how are we going to do that? We take the compound channel, which is given by I hat, and the delta strictly larger than 1. And then, we also have to take a subspace here, G of H. And then we from the preceding slide, from the compound channel thing, we know that we can come up with a sequence of MKM codes such that the slim inf here, one over log KM, is lower bounded by the infimum over channels in I hat and then coherent information. And also, these codes will work well for every channel in I hat. So there will be a lower bound, 1 minus gamma, where this gamma m here is small over of m to the minus 2 times cardinality of s. And we now, if we have these codes at hand, we can define a function. And we will define it in the following way here. So we will just use entanglement fidelity, our code here, the Sm goes into this channel here, and the permutation, we put in these unitary or unital channels, and they sort of they act in the usual way, they just permute tensor factors. Okay, so what we get out of this is for every permutation pi here, we sort of change the recovery map and the encoding map a little bit by permuting tensor factors. And then it's easy to show that this F is invariant under the action of the permutation group. And for the application of this robustification technique, we will then choose pi star to be equal to the identity. And now we will get the following out of it. Also, one thing you have to remember is that we define NQ, tensor N. NQ is just the probabilistic mixture over some over channels in the original set F. Yeah. And if we write this tensor product out, then we get this sum here. So if we want to lower bound this average over the small f here, we can write this as this. So from here, from this right-hand side, you just have to plug in this formula and use linearity of entanglement fidelity. Then you get all these things out here, all these probabilities, and end up with this formula. So from the choice of our recovery and encoding maps, we know that this is lower bounded by 1 minus gamma m, which equals this number here. And from the robustification technique, we then know that we can switch from this average here to the average over the permutation group. And we end up with this formula here. So this is an average over recovery and encoding maps. It equals the average over the small f, and is lower bounded by this term here, and by our choice of gamma n, this will go to 0 when n goes to infinity. So this means that for the AVQC, we can have a sequence of random codes given by that formula that achieves this number here. Delta was arbitrary, so the capacity is in fact lower bounded by this infimum here. And then we can use the BSST lemma again and get the regularized formula on the bottom of the page here. Okay, now we want to switch from random codes to deterministic codes. And the idea is the following. If we have positive deterministic capacity, then we can transmit entanglement. If we can transmit entanglement, we can also transmit classical information. So what we can try to do is somehow send classical information at rate zero, so that the sender can tell the receiver the branch of the probabilistic code, or of the random code. But the problem is that we have super exponentially many branches in our code here. We have to somehow reduce this number. And for that we use this elimination technique here, also from Alsweder. That's the elimination technique. So suppose we have, a finite AVQC, and a random code for it. And this is sort of, this number E of random code and AVQC just says how good the code works for this. AVQC, and so for every epsilon strictly larger than this right hand side here, which is sort of logarithmic in this quantity here, and every k which is also lower bounded by something dependent on this number here, but the important point here is that it's linear in M, okay, we can have k deterministic codes such that the average over these k codes is lower bounded by 1 minus epsilon here for every channel in the set. And so we sort of have, we had a large number of codes and somehow good convergence to zero. Now we have very small convergence or very slow convergence to zero, but we have sufficient, we have reduced the number of codes to a great amount now. And we can now really transmit we can establish a connection at rate zero so that the sender can tell the receiver which branch of the channel they are using. Okay, so that's for the converse, but I will skip that. This is really work in progress here. This is on this question whether we can say something about this, about the deterministic capacity of an AVQC being zero or not. So suppose we have a finite AVQC and a POVM, then we can define such a map here. And we will say that the finite AVQC is QC symmetrizable if there's a POVM such that this map here, such that this map here is symmetric, so we can interchange the tensor product factors here. There's also some kind of an interpretation for that. The point is that we can see this as a MAC which the jammer puts in front of the original channel, and since you can interchange the inputs here without changing the channel, you can somehow simulate a bad input for the channel. Okay. The jammer will fix that input. But since he can flip this, he ends up with, so he can flip his input to the right-hand side here, then this channel here is entanglement breaking, so it will no longer be possible to transmit entanglement over this, the whole channel. And then we can show that if finite AVQC is symmetrizable, then it has deterministic capacity equal to zero. Okay. Maybe we'll just stop here.